wall and began firing at random with both hands, screaming her rage and frustration. From the corner of the bridge, where the smoke was thinnest, came the shot that put her out of action. The trooper might have been standing there for minutes, unseen, awaiting each opportunity as it came. She had given him one, and he took it. The shot hit her in the shoulder, almost knocking her down. Her right arm went limp, and the blaster she held in that hand went flying. The pain was unbelievable. She fell to one knee, then ground her teeth even tighter and raised her left hand to fire at the trooper who'd shot her. Her aim was good. He flickered back into visibility and crumpled forward. Her satisfaction was short-lived. A bolt of energy flashed past her, and the pistol exploded from her hand. She stared at the hand, momentarily surprised to see that she still had fingers. Some type of stun weapon, obviously. A trooper stepped toward her through the smoke, holding his weapon at the ready, just in case she had another blaster secreted on her somewhere. She didn't. Neither did anyone on the bridge. They were all dead. The pain in her shoulder peaked, making the world seem gray and distant. The figure came closer. He seemed enormous. He wasn't a trooper at all, she distantly realized. His armor was green. Who are... He didn't let her finish the question. His blaster flared again, as bright as a sun, and the world vanished. Chapter 13. Starkiller had just secured the Rogue Shadow when the first of the proximity alarms went off. He watched the initial attack unfold from the bridge, with Coda leaning close over his shoulder. What Coda saw exactly through his heightened senses, Starkiller didn't know. But he was keeping up. That was the important thing. "The asteroids," Starkiller said, hastily scanning the surrounding space. "That's where they were hiding." "They must have been lying dormant ever since the fleet arrived." Coda's right hand rested on the grip of his lightsaber. "What brought them out of hiding now?" There was only one possible answer. "Me," Starkiller said. "It's one of Vader's bounty hunters. He found out where the fleet was due to gather next, and instead of turning it in to the Imperial Navy, waited here until I showed up. Now, he's springing his trap." "We should leave," said Coda. "Give him the slip." Starkiller shook his head. As on the screen in front of him, a small assault bomber was ripped apart. "I have to get to Juno before she's hurt. Even if it means putting yourself at risk?" "Our bounty hunter friend will find it works the other way around." Starkiller checked the disposition of the attacking ships. They were homing in on the Salvation, exactly as expected, now that the Rogue Shadow was docked alongside it. One of the larger ships was heaving around a ram. If the move was successful, that would give the hostiles easy access to the frigate. Around them, the fleet was dispersing, protecting the ships that could be saved, before a much larger Imperial presence arrived. Only he and Coda knew that there were no other ships coming. "Your new squad shouldn't be far away," he told Coda. "Call them by comlink when they're in range. They can keep the fight going outside while we get to Juno. Come on." He hurried from the bridge and through the airlock. Even as he went, the frigate shook from a massive impact, presumably the ship ramming into its hull. He braced himself to ride out the impact, estimating that it came from the forward half of the ship. If the boarding maneuver had been successful, that meant there would be hostiles between them and the Salvation's bridge. For a split instant, he felt a crippling sense of guilt. He and Coda had had the chance to warn Juno that something was going to happen while they were approaching her ship, but they hadn't taken it. By not doing so, they might, inadvertently, have helped the vision he received come true. the feeling didn't last. The future was always in motion. If willpower alone couldn't change it, then brute force would have to do. The deck steadied underfoot. He lit both his lightsabers, now brilliant fiery blue, as they'd been on Dagobah, and leapt through the docking tube into the Salvation. The lights were flickering relentlessly from on to off, red to black, creating a surreal landscape full of smoke and sparks. Figures moved ahead of them, but it was impossible for the moment to tell who was on what side. Coda rushed forward, sensing directly through the Force and therefore unimpaired by lack of light or visual distractions. Starkiller watched his back, happy for him to take the lead. His concentration was taking a hit from more than just the lack of light. Being so close to Juno, and yet still separated from her, was a constant distraction. Until they were in the same room together, better yet, in each other's arms, he would remain on edge. The figures he'd seen at the end of the corridor were Alliance soldiers firing around a corner at a trio of Imperial stormtroopers who'd formed a barricade across a major intersection. Wind whistled around them. Clearly, shields and self-repair facilities hadn't quite sealed off the breach formed by the ramming ship. Flecks of ash and soot swirled in short-lived eddies as Coda ran boldly toward the barricade, deflecting every shot that came at him back to the person who fired it. White-armored limbs flailed as the troopers went down. Starkiller waved for the Alliance soldiers to secure the position while he and the General carried on toward the bridge. They passed the surgery suite, where medics were patching up crew members hit during the early strikes. The suite itself had been hit, creating a chaotic, body-strewn battle hospital where a sterile environment should have been. Starkiller didn't doubt the surgery had been deliberately targeted. The ship had a complement of more than 1,000. The more crew members the attackers could put permanently out of action, the better for the invaders. Explosions boomed in the major access tubes leading toward the forward compartments. Starkiller and Coda headed straight for them, ignoring the trams that occasionally whizzed overhead. They were too vulnerable to sabotage an ambush. Better to run, Starkiller thought. What he lost in speed, he more than gained in the surety of getting where he needed to go. Nothing would stop him getting to the bridge. To Juno. They reached the impact site of the ramming ship. No one guarded it. Clearly the stormtroopers had another way off the ship. Or they expected to take control and fly the frigate itself. Either way, a blackened trail led forward from the site, cutting through walls and blast doors, heading in a perfectly straight line through the ship. Dead rebels lay everywhere, sprawled or slouched where they'd fallen. There were a lot of them. Too many. Juno trained this crew? Starkiller asked Coda.
Yes.
They know how to fight then, which means they're not fighting ordinary troopers. Starkiller stooped over a fallen sergeant who clung barely to life.
Who attacked you? Or what?
Out of nowhere,
the sergeant breathed.
Invisible.
Stormtroopers?
But the rebel had said his last. His head lolled back to the deck, and Starkiller closed his dead eyes for him.
Camouflage systems. Something new,
Coda said.
Keep all your senses alert.
Starkiller nodded, acknowledging another situation in which Coda's odd substitute for sight gave him a unique advantage. They hurried through the ship with their lightsabers at the ready. Starkiller remembered one of his training sessions, when Darth Vader had placed a blast helmet over his young apprentice's eyes and locked him in a cage with a trio of starved, howling rasps. The hunger-maddened birds had pecked and bitten at him until, by sheer necessity, he'd learned to listen to what his instincts, not his covered eyes, were telling him. Not one of the birds had survived. Apart from soldiers clearing away rubble and healing the injured, the way ahead seemed clear, but it paid to be too careful. More explosions came from the decks ahead and below. Their direction of travel became less horizontal, more vertical, as they reached the steeply pitched nose of the ship. He and Coda forewent lifts and descended the dark booming shafts by their own means. Severed cables snaked around them as they jumped from level to level. The bridge grew rapidly closer. Blaster fire strobed at them out of a gaping doorway. The lift doors had been blown away, and a pair of stormtroopers waited there to make sure no one followed by that means. Starkiller and Coda made short work of them, downing one with his own fire, slashing the other in two once they were in range. Immediately, fire came from the next floor down. This time, their adversaries weren't visible. Coda stood over the fallen troopers and pointed down into the shadows. Starkiller could see nothing with his eyes, but he drew the full power of the Force into his hands and blasted the empty air. Blue lightning made short work of the camouflage system of the trooper hiding there. He writhed and sparked until Starkiller released him, letting him drop heavily to the depths below. They moved more cautiously from then on. The sound of blaster fire echoed around them, but none was aimed at them. The lower decks were where most of the fighting was taking place. Starkiller longed to know what was happening outside, but didn't dare break his concentration to check. Three invisible troopers guarded the entrance to the bridge level. He blasted his way through them, not giving them the slightest chance to fight back. Four more stood outside the bridge itself. Emergency lighting and smoke made details hard to discern, but it looked like the doors behind them had been blown in. Starkiller rushed forward. If he was too late. If they had... Coda cut in front of him, holding him back with one hand on his chest.
What are you doing?
Starkiller growled as he tried to find a clear line of approach. Cool down, boy, said the general. Fight without hatred, or you'll lose the war. Starkiller took the advice to heart. He recognized the feelings rising inside him, and he reminded himself where they could lead. He wasn't Darth Vader's servant anymore. He was no instrument of the dark side. He didn't want to find Juno, only to have her reject him for being a monster. He needed to be calm, to find himself, to proceed with surety in any direction but toward his doom. Doing so slowed him down by less than a second. The four troopers fell, sparking and whining, and he was through the shattered doors into the bridge. Thick smoke hid the carnage, but he could smell it in the air. A fire was burning and no one was putting it out. He extinguished the flames with one sweep of the Force and sucked the acrid black smoke into the corridor outside. The unnatural wind howled, echoing the tension in his heart. Bodies everywhere, most in rebel uniforms. He stepped across them, searching their faces, turning them over when they lay face down. There. The dog-faced officer he'd seen killed in the vision. No sign of Proxy, lying in a pool of deep red blood. Juno. He ran to her side, stifling a scream growing in his chest. Too late. He had arrived too late. The attack had happened exactly as he'd seen it, and now the third of the visions was about to come true. He would hold Juno's body in his arms and... Boy! Coda cautioned him. The ship was shaking, echoing his distress. Starkiller tried to rein in his feelings, but they were too overwhelming. If she died, what reason did he have to live? Juno's eyes opened. He fell backward in surprise. She stared up at him and tried to lift her head. Only then did he notice that there wasn't a scratch on her or her uniform. The blood she was lying in had belonged to someone else.
Master?
Sparks flashed through a rent in her skin, and suddenly, the illusion failed.
Proxy!
Yes, Master. I...
The droid held his head as though in pain. One of his eyes had shorted, and there was a broad hole in his chest. His left arm was missing from the elbow down. I was informed that you were dead. So was Captain Eclipse. I believe she will be most surprised to see you.
She's alive.
Starkiller gripped Proxy by his narrow metal shoulders.
Where? Tell me where!
The droid's innards ground together like the workings of a sand-filled machine. His image flickered and changed again, becoming an image of a green-armored man with a T-shaped visor. Proxy's right arm lifted to point at the bridge entrance.
The Imperials took her toward Deck 7,
he said, returning to his true form. His arm fell to the deck with a clank.
She is injured.
Starkiller stared at the droid in confusion and alarm. The green armor matched the vision of the bounty hunter he'd seen talking to Darth Vader on Kamino, accepting instructions to recapture the missing clone. But what was he playing at? Why invade a ship? Effectively destroy its command structure and not take it over? Why was Juno in particular, the ship's captain, still alive? Because she was more than just a captain. She was bait. He stood up, full of a dark and terrible determination.
Order the attack on Kamino, General,
he said, moving for the exit. Kota looked around him in momentary confusion.
But the crew, neat, your squad can fly this thing. Inform the rest of the fleet. We need to send Darth Vader the message that we mean business.
All right, but what about Deck 7 as the cargo bay? If I hurry, I can cut them off.
Starkiller ignited both his lightsabers and ran out into the smoke. Chapter 14. Juno struggled back to consciousness through thick and suffocating fog. She had been dreaming of the Empirical, of being confined to shackles and strung up for weeks on end, with her wrists bleeding and her shoulders aching. The pain seemed utterly immediate and unceasing now, particularly in her left hand and right shoulder. It shouted at her with a voice that was almost audible.
Wake up, Captain Eclipse. You have to walk now. My troopers are needed elsewhere.
Lights flashed in her eyes. She felt a sharp jab in her neck. Something jetted into her bloodstream with an audible hiss. Bright alertness rushed through her, accompanied by a sharp taste of metal. She was being held upright by two armored stormtroopers, with her head dangling forward and her feet brushing the ground. Her muscles jerked. Pain flared. Suddenly fully awake, she struggled against the hands holding her and tried to pull away from the armored figure standing in front of her. His green-gray Duraplast visor came closer, filling her vision.
You are expendable, Captain Eclipse,
said the man within.
I warn you against inconveniencing me too much.
The coldness of his tone convinced her more than his words. She stopped pulling against the stormtroopers who held her and stood as straight as she was able. A third trooper affixed binders around her wrists so her hands were held securely in front of her. The movement pulled at her injured shoulder and prompted another flare-up of pain. She remembered being hit by blaster fire and nothing after that. Someone had applied a field bandage to the wound, which was something, but it meant she couldn't tell how severe it was. The fingers of her left hand were burned and red, otherwise undamaged.
Why haven't you killed me already?
She asked the man in green. He didn't lack the capacity to do so. Judging by the impressive array of blades, dart launchers, and flame projectors strategically placed about his person, not to mention the Blastech EE-3 carbine rifle he carried in one hand.
While I live, I'll do everything in my power to regain control of the ship.
It's not your ship I'm after.
He waved one gloved hand and the troopers fell away. With the other hand, he clipped a chain to her binders.
When my employer's done with you, you can have it back for all I care.
Your employer?
He turned and tugged firmly on the chain. The wrench to her shoulder blotted out all other thoughts but to follow him. Sparks danced in her vision for a moment, and when they cleared, the troopers had fallen behind. Her captor was leading her through a broad corridor, literally blasted through the ship, one of several if she remembered the data proxy had shown her right before the bridge was invaded. It was hard to match its trajectory to the ship's original designs, but she thought they might be headed toward the base of the primary communications array.
If you have an employer, that makes you a bounty hunter, she said, fishing for information. At least you don't look like any kind of Imperial I've ever seen. But you use Imperial troops, so you know people in high places.
Is Grand Moff Tarkin still ticked off about what we did on Dak?
Is that what this is about?
The bounty hunters said nothing. They turned a corner and arrived at a vertical shaft.
You've got a jetpack, but I haven't, she said.
Unless you want me to climb tied up like this.
He whistled, and from above descended a cable and harness, which he wrapped around her, pinning her arms to her body. She braced herself for the ascent, but even so, when the cable started moving, she almost blacked out. The pain was incredible. Whoever had put the bandage on had cared less about her comfort than merely stopping the blood flow from the wound. The roar of the bounty hunter's thrusters ruled out any further conversation. She concentrated instead on trying to find a way out of her predicament. The binders were very tight, so tight, her hands were already going numb. No chance of wriggling out of them then. Her blaster was probably still back on the bridge, and she had no way of calling for help except by shouting. Thus far, she had seen no sign of her crew anywhere along the route. Chances were they were busy elsewhere, with a diversion staged by the bounty hunter's troopers. Her best chance of escape, then, lay at the other end of their journey, when the binders came off and her hands were free. And even then, she had to hope for a distraction to give her an advantage. There was no way she, injured, could take on an exceedingly well-armed bounty hunter in a fair fight and expect to prevail. The cable jerked to a halt next to a hole carved in the wall of an empty mess. The bounty hunter came up beside her and landed safely on the deck. His thrusters cut out with a hiss. He reached out and bodily hauled her onto the solid deck. Juno didn't struggle. One wrong step when the cable came off, and she'd fall to her death below. From around her came the sounds of fighting. Blaster fire, explosions, screams and shouts, feet running in all directions. The air was laced with a thick, dangerous tang, as though the ship itself were wounded. She hoped the guard she'd stationed at its critical points had managed to repel at least some of the boarders. If she were to die, she didn't want her last recorded act in the Alliance to be the destruction of her ship.
Whatever your employer is paying you, she said, the Alliance will double it.
He said nothing, pulling her after him along the charred makeshift corridor.
You're a man of principle, then.
It's about repeat business. And your Alliance most likely won't exist long enough to pay my first fee.
You're overconfident, like the Emperor.
I have reason to be. His credit's good.
Is he your employer?
He said nothing.
It must be Tarkin, then, she said, thinking.
Try to get him talking. Sooner or later, he's bound to let something slip.
He's the only one I can think of with a motive for capturing me. He wants me to be his new slave, right?
He ignored her.
Who then? Who would go to so much trouble?
It's not about you.
But you need me. Why?
An idea struck her. This is all about Kota. For what he and I did on Kata Nymordia.
It must be.
But I didn't think Baron Tarka was so well connected.
quiet.
The bounty hunter had slowed as though sensing danger ahead. She listened, but could hear only the sounds of distant demolition, communicated through the floors and walls around her. It sounded like a wrecking droid was coming through the ship toward her. "At least tell me how you found the fleet," she said. "Who did you torture to get that information?" He didn't answer. Behind them, metal tore and glass shattered. The bounty hunter turned and raised his rifle. Someone, or something, was coming up through the floor, 10 meters away. Juno stared in shock as a figure dressed entirely in black leapt out of the new hole in the floor, swinging 2 bright blue blades through the air. The bounty hunter fired at the figure, 3 precise shots in quick succession. The energy bolts were deflected into the walls, where they discharged with bright flashes. By their light, Juno saw the face of the man running toward her. It was him. Time stopped. The universe shattered around her. Natural laws unraveled, and everything she thought she knew dissolved to nothing. It was him. But it couldn't be. It couldn't be, but it was. Her heart leapt even as all the pieces fell into place, forming a terrible new pattern. She knew now who the bounty hunter was really seeking and who was behind the plan. The pattern made sense in an instant, even as everything else seemed to fall apart. Starkiller was heading into a trap, and she was the lure. Her mind teetered on the brink of hysteria. First Kota, and now him. Doesn't anyone stay dead anymore? More questions flooded in. He's back. But how? And how did the bounty hunter know about him before I did? The seconds ticked again. Her heart restarted. There was suddenly no more time to think. The man she had loved began to run toward them, his mask a face of fierce determination, and she knew that he had seen her too. She opened her mouth to shout a warning, but the bounty hunter shoved her through a doorway out of view. She jerked to a halt at the end of the chain and went down to her knees, fighting waves of agony. Behind her, she heard Starkiller call her name. But his voice was drowned out on the second syllable by a massive explosion. Smoke and debris rushed out of the corridor and filled the room. Even out of the blast's direct line, she was still stung by the shrapnel. She covered her mouth and closed her eyes an instant too late. Blinking, coughing, deafened, she fought waves of unconsciousness as the bounty hunter dragged her back to her feet and pulled her into the corridor. Through streaming eyes, she saw a huge hole where Starkiller had been standing. Drips of molten metal rained down on the cavernous space below. "If you killed him," she started to say.
"You're as foolish as he is,"
the bounty hunter said with a sneer in his voice. He hurried along the corridor, pulling her after him. The tugs on the chain were sharp and insistent. Between the pain and trying to maintain her footing on the uneven floor, she had no inclination to talk anymore. Wherever he was taking her, he was in a much greater hurry than he'd been before. They left the burned corridor and entered an area that was relatively undamaged. Juno thought she recognized the location, and that was confirmed when she and her captor reached a large double door lying open in their path. The cargo bay. It was empty, apart from a dozen crates and 2 dead rebel crew members. Dim red light flickered and played across the vast space. Again, she worried about the reactor's functionality. The bounty hunter tugged her inside and closed the doors behind them. As they slid shut, she caught something moving in the shadows above, but couldn't make out what it was. Not the cargo arm, that was for sure. It was much too big. Behind them came the sound of destruction once again.
the bounty hunter hurried to the matching double door on the far side of the bay, dragging her behind him like a recalcitrant child. "You have no idea who you're dealing with," she said, and received only silence in reply. The doors began to open ahead of them, revealing the orange-yellow vista of the Itani Nebula. The fight continued for control of space around the Salvation. Energy weapons flashed and flared. Starlight gleamed off wreckage and combative starships alike. On the other side of the force field, preventing them from being sucked into space, was a transport, the likes of which Juno had never seen before. Too compact to be a freighter, but too stocky to be a starfighter. It was much taller than it was either wide or deep, giving it a slightly long-trunked appearance. It had the same functional and highly customized look as the bounty hunter beside her, and Juno had no doubt at all that it belonged to him. "Shame, it's the other side of the force field," she said. "Now what are you going to do?" As the sound of rending metal behind them grew louder, the bounty hunter punched another button on his right gauntlet and turned to face the opening. Figuring that he was never going to be this distracted again, Juno grabbed the chain with both hands and pulled it out of his grasp. Simultaneously, she rocked back on one leg and kicked him in the back with all her strength, propelling him toward the force field. While he was off balance, she ran for the other doors, hoping to get her hand on the activation switch before he recovered. What came next happened almost too quickly for her to take in. First, the doors ahead of her burst open, punched by unimaginable force from the far side. Then the force field collapsed, sending everything in the room rushing toward the endless vacuum of space, including her and the dark figure standing where the inner doors had once been. She lost her footing and jarred her shoulder. Dazed by pain, she would have tumbled helplessly out of the cargo bay, but for a cable that whipped about her waist and dragged her back toward the bounty hunter. At the same time, a stubby missile, protruding from the top of his jetpack, launched itself out into the void. Halfway between the cargo bay and the hanging ship outside, its tip unfolded into a grappling hook that an instant later found solid purchase on the side of the ship. The cable binding Juno brought her within arm's reach of the bounty hunter. Unaffected by the rapidly thinning atmosphere, he slapped a breather across her face and bodily threw himself out of the cargo bay, taking her with him. She kicked and struggled, but his grip and the cable combined were impossible to resist. Her cry of anger and frustration fogged up the mask of the breather, so for a moment she couldn't tell what was happening behind her. They jerked to a halt, and she assumed at first that it was because they'd reached the bounty hunter's ship, but a rapid volley of blaster fire back the way they'd come, followed by the straining sound of the grapnel retractor, revealed that something very different was happening. She held her breath, cursing the foggy visor and willing it to clear more quickly. By the fiery light of the nebula, she glimpsed the Salvation looming ahead of her, sparkling jets indicating where breaches were venting air into the vacuum. Flames burned on the other side of several transparasteel windows. Bodies tumbled like dead stars, too many to count. Clinging to the edge of the cargo bay door, withstanding the emptiness of space, the doors that were trying to close on him, and the shots fired his way by the bounty hunter, was Starkiller. One hand reached for her, fingers straining as though clutching at something invisible. Through the force, he was trying to bring her back. The whining of the grapnel reached a higher pitch. It was only a matter of time before something snapped, either the cable or the motor trying to reel it in. Juno had no doubt of that. Starkiller had shifted whole Star Destroyers. It would be nothing for him to overpower a single motor. The bounty hunter reached around her to push yet another button on his gauntlet. For a second, it had no obvious effect. Then, in the cargo bay behind Starkiller, something vast and angular moved.
Sparks flared.
Starkiller turned with lightsaber swinging. The force pulling her back to safety faltered, and then died entirely as the cargo bay doors slammed shut between her and him. Juno could hold her breath no longer. She raged against her captor, calling him things she hadn't called anyone since her earliest days in the academy. She kicked and flailed against his chest, not caring how much it hurt her shoulder. The pain she felt ran deeper than flesh. Her entire being was in agony. He was alive. She had seen him. A thousand questions barraged her. Questions she didn't want to ask, but would have to address later because they weren't ever going to go away. How did he survive? Where had he been for the last year? Why had he stayed away when the Rebel Alliance had needed him so badly? Why didn't he tell her? For now, it was terrible enough that she was being taken from him, and there was nothing she or anyone could do to stop it. Chapter 15. Juno. Her proximity filled his mind, making it hard to deal with anything or anyone else around him. After leaving Coda, his comm link had squawked and blared about distant events and conflicts, so he had switched it off in irritation. He didn't care what happened outside the ship, only what happened to Juno inside it. When stormtroopers had crossed his path, he had blasted them out of the way with disinterested ferocity. Nothing could slow him. Nothing would stop him. The only thing keeping him and Juno apart was distance, and that could easily be overcome.
Whatever you have seen, follow it, you must.
To the ends of the galaxy if I have to.
But the man in his vision was wilier than Starkiller had anticipated. The trail he'd been following led nowhere, and was seeded with numerous traps and troopers designed to slow him down. If Juno was being taken to the cargo bay on level 7, then she was going by a very different route. He forced himself to concentrate, seeking her through the many walls and decks of the Salvation, and finally sensed her presence 2 decks up. They were connected through the Force by invisible lines that might fade, but would never entirely break. Now he saw them clearly. It was just a matter of following them. Forgoing stairwells or lifts, he simply blasted his way through the ship's infrastructure. Metal and plastoid could be repaired. Wires and hydraulics could be rerouted. Human life, Juno's life, could not be replaced. And he had seen her, briefly, face white and spattered with her own blood, eyes wide and staring at him in utter disbelief. What was going through her mind, he could not begin to guess. Joy, confusion, relief, doubt? They had only locked stairs for a moment before the man who'd taken her captive pushed her out of sight. Then he'd fired a missile at Starkiller's feet that had blown a massive hole in the frigate. Starkiller had thrown up a force shield at the last instant, but had still found himself 4 decks away when the blast dissipated. By the time he'd retraced his steps, Juno was gone. She was nearby, though, and it had taken him less than a minute to catch up, thinking hard all the way. If Juno was bait, why hadn't the trap been sprung? Starkiller was still alive and unfettered, and so presumably was Juno. Where did this particular gambit end?
I do not expect you to survive,
the voice of his former master said in his mind.
But should you succeed, you will be 1 step closer to your destiny.
Starkiller could clearly remember the moment those words had been spoken. It seemed an eternity ago, while receiving orders to kill the mad Jedi droid maker Kazdan Paratus. He'd succeeded in that mission, but his destiny remained as elusive as ever. What did Darth Vader want? Sometimes it seemed that only Darth Vader could answer that question. Starkiller reached the cargo bay doors. They were locked, but that didn't slow him for longer than a second. Inert matter was no match for the Force, and therefore no obstacle to him. Had Juno not been on the other side, he would have vaporized it in an instant, sending scalding metal shrapnel flying all through the cargo bay. She was facing him, being dragged backward by a loop of cable wrapped around her waist. The armored man blew out the cargo bay's external force field, and the vacuum pulled them, with the rushing atmosphere, outward into space. Starkiller grabbed hold of the nearest solid object in order to stop himself from sliding out after them. There was a stocky ship hanging just outside the airlock, obviously waiting to scoop them up and take them elsewhere. Juno's captor fired a grappling hook toward it and began to reel him and his struggling prisoner aboard. Starkiller braved the hurricane pouring past him and skidded to the very edge of the airlock. There he found Purchase against the bulkhead and stretched one hand out toward them. Again, he could have wrenched them back into the frigate without great difficulty, were it not for fear of hurting Juno in the process. If he pulled too hard, she might be crushed. Also, the man holding her was armed and unafraid to use his weapon. If he turned the weapon on her, she might be killed before Starkiller could prevent it. Still, he tried, straining against the cable winch, and when that proved too difficult, actually dragging the ship in toward the frigate. Why fight the winch when he could just as easily move the anchor it was attached to? The stocky ship rocked and swayed and began to creep toward him, Juno and her captor with it. Then, a shadow fell across him from behind. His concentration wavered. Something was moving toward him. Not a stormtrooper, visible or otherwise. It came from above, and got bigger the more it came into view. Dying wasn't going to help Juno. He turned, lightsabers upraised to strike whatever it was. A droid of some kind, with multiple glowing photoreceptors and a vast armored body that towered over him, balanced on 8 thick legs. He'd seen it before, in his vision of Kamino. That knowledge didn't help, however, as it raised its forelegs and tried to spear him with 4 powerful lasers. He jumped, and the orange beams followed him, leaving glowing lines in their wake. It was big but fast, and he barely stayed ahead of its deadly attack. Behind him, the cargo bay doors slammed shut, and life support began pumping in air. It smelled scorched and acrid under the giant droid's relentless assault. Running wasn't helping either. It was only wasting time. Starkiller took stock and decided to try another tactic. He leapt into a corner and faced the droid with his lightsabers crossed. The convergent beams hit both blades and were reflected back at their source. The droid's mirror finish bounced them right back at him, doubling the number of attacks he had to deal with. Instead of retreating, he changed the angle of his blades. The 4 laser beams reflected by him sliced down toward the ground, slicing arcs in the durasteel floor. Metallic smoke rose up around the droid in thick streamers. By the time it realized his intentions, it was too late. Already straining under the droid's weight, the floor sagged and gave way. The droid's lasers switched off entirely too late. The sharp tips of its 8 legs scrabbled for Purchase, leaving deep scratches in the floor, which only gave way further. With a grinding, screaming of metal, the droid dropped out of sight and crashed through the levels below, one after the other. Almost before it had vanished from sight, Starkiller was moving. The external door was shut, but he forced it open and braved the renewed storm of air to see outside. Juno and her captor were no longer visible. The stocky ship's trio of engines was firing, pulling it away from the frigate. Starkiller reached out to catch it, too late. The craft barely wobbled as it receded into the distance and vanished into hyperspace.
No!
His cry disappeared into the vacuum. He had lost her again. And for all his frustration and fury, there was nothing he could do about it now. The Force couldn't accomplish miracles, even in his hands. It could, however, help him get revenge. The dark side rose up in him, seductively powerful. Darth Vader had sent the bounty hunter to capture Juno, knowing that Starkiller would try to save her from him. There was only one place, then, that she could be headed. Back to where it had all started. Kamino. He would go there, but he would not succumb to the trap Darth Vader had undoubtedly prepared. His wrath would know no bounds. All who stood in his way would suffer. A new vision came to him, rushing out of the void to fill his mind. Lightning. The Dark Lord on one knee before him, helmet slick and shining in the rain, disarmed. Starkiller's lightsabers formed an X between them, and Vader's neck lay just millimeters from their intersection. With a flick of his wrists, Starkiller could behead the galaxy's greatest monster and gain revenge for everything he'd done. But what would revenge get him? It couldn't turn back time. It couldn't tell him who the real Starkiller was. It couldn't bring Juno back. None of those things, he decided. But better than nothing. His face formed a determined expression. He tensed to execute the man who'd made him into what he was. A killing machine with no hope for anything better. Before he could complete the move, a red blade erupted from his chest, exactly as it had in a former life on the Empyrical. Only this time, his former master couldn't have wielded it. He still knelt before him, awaiting the death blow. The pain and shock were too great. Starkiller arched backward, lightsabers falling from his hands. With an agonized cry, he crumpled to the ground and stared up at the man who had killed him. It was himself. Darth Vader rose to his feet. Blaster fire erupted around them. Starkiller heard screams and cries and the sound of people falling. The battle was intense but short-lived, and he had eyes only for the pair in black looming over him.
I lied when I told you that the cloning process had not been perfected.
His former master's words fell like blows upon his stricken form. The version of himself standing at the Dark Lord's side was upright and whole in every way. The Sith training uniform he wore was immaculate and lethally adorned. The two red lightsabers held crossed over his chest didn't waver a millimeter as their eyes locked. Starkiller's breath was growing shallow. The fire that had burned in him was dying, as it always died in the end. The dark side consumed everything. Hatred was never a substitute for love, and the price of pursuing it was life itself. In the corner of his view, lying drenched in the rain, lay a limp, shattered form. He couldn't bear to look at it. Instead, he clutched the burning hole in his chest and watched the Dark Lord give his new apprentice his first orders.
You have faced your final test.
The reborn Starkiller knelt at the Dark Lord's feet. What is thy bidding, my master?
Take the Rogue Shadow. Scour the far reaches of the galaxy. Find the last of the rebels and destroy them.
As you wish.
Then, and only then, will you achieve your destiny.
The new apprentice rose and walked away, stepping over Juno's body as he went. Kota's body lay nearby, and Proxy's sliced neatly in two. Darth Vader looked down at Starkiller's body and, with a contemptuous flick of his wrist, sent it skidding over the edge of the platform and into the sea. The last thing Starkiller saw was storm clouds and lightning far above, as he had on the first day of his freedom.
just days ago.
Thunder boomed, and Starkiller came back to himself with a gasp. The sound echoed around him, disorienting him. It couldn't be real. He had been seeing the future, not something happening in the present. The deck beneath him shook. The sound came again. Not thunder, he realized, but the giant droid fighting its way back up to him, intending to finish their battle. He felt weary then, weary of hatred and pain and loss and despair. He would fight on, but not by giving in to the dark side. He would find his own way, even as he ran headlong into a trap and put everything at risk. He reactivated the cargo bay's force fields, and air rushed back in once more. Staring out at the nebula, he pulled the comm link from his belt and switched it on.
Coda! Come in, Coda!
I'm here, boy.
Where's here exactly?
On the bridge. We've regained control of the Salvation and repaired the hyperdrive. The hostile ships are retreating. What's your status?
That doesn't matter. Juno has been captured, and I know exactly where she's going. It has to be Kamino, where it all started. Which means that Darth Vader is there too. I think he set another trap.
For you or the rest of us?
Just me, I think.
Then he won't be ready for the entire Rebel fleet when it arrives on his doorstep. I told the Alliance about this chance to strike. The fleet is converging exactly as you wanted it to.
Good, said Starkiller with a faint smile. Because if you hadn't sent the order, I was going to go without you.
Prepare for light speed, boy,
said Coda from the bridge.
Let's hope you know what you're doing.
The booming from below grew louder. Behind it came a new scuttling sound that Starkiller hadn't heard before, as of giant metal insects crawling across a hollow deck. Outside, the stars stretched and snapped. The angular impossibility of hyperspace filled the cargo bay doors. Starkiller activated his lightsabers and stood facing the hole in the floor. The dark vision he'd just received ate at his confidence. Thus far, three of his visions had come true. The bounty hunter had been sent after him, resulting in Juno being injured and deprived of her command, and his lightsabers had turned blue. That left two visions, the grimmest of them all. Was there any way he could avoid both their deaths? Was the other Starkiller, perfect and deadly in every way, something that already existed? Or could he be a mere possibility, or even nothing more than a manifestation of his deepest fears? What happens if you do clone someone Force-sensitive?
Terrible things. Insanity, psychosis, suicidal tendencies.
The list of symptoms Nikkei Vons had rattled off was frighteningly close to what Starkiller himself was experiencing. But he had begun, perversely, to take hope from that. Perhaps Coda was right, and he'd always been this way, even in his first life. Maybe learning to hate the way one felt was part of growing up. Maybe. The rattling of tiny feet reached a crescendo. Five miniature versions of the huge droid rushed out of the hole on four sharp-tipped feet. He snapped out of his thoughts and ran forward to meet them, wearily grateful for the opportunity to act rather than think. The first two leapt at him, and he sliced them in pieces right out of the air. The other two split up and came for him from opposite sides. He met both advances with a lightsaber outstretched in each hand, using the Force to guide his blows. The droid shot piercing darts of energy and screams at him, trying to get through his guard. They, too, were immune to their own reflected fire. So instead of pursuing that tactic, he danced closer to one and sliced its domed midsection in two, then brought his free hand around to blast the other with lightning. The miniature droid went wild, spinning in circles and sending energy darts about the cargo bay. Its green eyes glowed blue, then purple, and then its head exploded. Tiny bits of metal rained all over the hold with an almost musical sound. More rattling came from the hold. Starkiller approached the lip and peered cautiously over the edge. No less than a dozen droids were climbing toward him, hopping from deck to deck through the gaps the larger version had created. He reached out for the crates remaining in the cargo hold and sent them tumbling down on the droids' heads. They fell with legs spinning and were crushed far below. Barely had they been dealt with, then more appeared, leaping upward to attack him. He pulled out his comlink again.
Coda, we have a problem.
You might be right, came the gruff reply. Proxy's picking up red lights all through the lower decks. Something you did?
We have a droid loose. I think it's headed for the secondary reactor.
If it takes that out, we could lose the Navicomp. And we don't want that to happen out here.
Starkiller glanced at the swirling madness of hyperspace. Send as many troops as you can spare to defend it.
That won't be many. The ship took heavy losses, so we're on a skeleton crew.
All right. I'll be there in a minute.
Starkiller ended the call and leapt feet first into the shaft. He lashed out with his lightsabers as he fell, taking out all of the miniature droids one at a time. When he landed lightly at the bottom, a rain of droid parts fell around him, red-limbed and bleeding sparks. More were waiting for him in the path of the larger version. He glimpsed it far ahead, cutting through bulkheads and beams that lay in its path. The smaller droid seemed to be dropping from its underbelly, unfolding with a snap and hurrying back to confront him. The parent droid was definitely heading for the secondary reactor. But why now? The question occupied his mind as he fought his way past the smaller droids. Why not earlier, before the ship entered hyperspace? The answer lay in the very question, he decided. Losing Navicomp mid-jump would be disastrous. They might be blown to atoms or never return to real space. Should the droid even get close to damaging the reactor, then they would have no choice but to drop out of hyperspace rather than take the risk. It was a delaying tactic. Just like everything else had been ever since Starkiller had engaged with the Imperials. Their leader, the bounty hunter, had wanted to grab Juno only in order to lure him elsewhere. He had never intended to engage directly with Starkiller. And that was a good call, for Starkiller would have blown him to atoms had he stood between him and her. Instead, the bounty hunter was forcing him to come face to face with the only man in the galaxy who had ever killed him. Starkiller would face his creator and make the choice. Live as a monster or die as himself, whoever that was. Starkiller thought it unlikely that Darth Vader saw the irony in the situation. It was doubtful he saw anything in his plan other than objective methodology. Like Starkiller, Vader had been trained in the art of betrayal by a Sith who somehow expected nothing but absolute servitude in return. The finer points of existence, not just irony, but humor, sarcasm, regret, and many more, were completely lost on him. Darth Vader was, for all intents and purposes, the machine he looked like. He fought like a machine, too, with relentless blows and single-minded aggression. The first time they'd dueled, in Starkiller's first life, Vader had displayed no anger at all, just determination, not to kill his apprentice, but to wear him into submission. The fight had raged across the training deck of the Executor for hours, with Starkiller never landing a single blow, no matter how he tried. He had gone from excitement at thinking that he had graduated to a new level of mastery to realizing just how much he had left to learn. More fuel had been added to the hatred he'd felt for his master and tormentor, along with a twisted kind of love for the man who'd made him stronger by showing him how weak he was. The fight had only stopped when Starkiller collapsed unconscious from exhaustion and was dragged by Proxy to his meditation chamber. And maybe there, Starkiller thought, in that single-mindedness and determination that Darth Vader had handed down to his apprentice lay his own weakness. Machines were exemplary at certain things. They were monomaniacal and focused, as Proxy had been in Starkiller's early life, when his mission had been to protect his charge, while at the same time training him by trying to kill him. Contradictions existed in their worlds, but they caused no conflict. They were simply assimilated and worked around, like the droid Starkiller had fought during his training on Kamino. The galaxy wasn't a machine, and neither was the rebellion. It would confound Darth Vader, perhaps even surprise him.
"You can teach me nothing,"
Darth Vader had told him on the Death Star. Starkiller vowed to prove him very wrong on that score.
Part 3. Retribution. Chapter 16.
Juno woke with a start. She was lying on her side in complete darkness. Her hands were unbound, and her right shoulder was numb all the way down to her elbow. There was a sickening throb between her eyes that spoke of another stunning at the hands of her captor. The last thing she remembered was being dragged into a ship and the airlock sliding closed behind them. The Salvation had loomed over her like a mountain, glowing red and yellow by the light of the nearby nebula. The remaining TIE fighters had broken off their attack and were retreating back into the asteroid clouds. A smattering of turbo laser fire chased them as they went. Then nothing. And now blackness, with nothing connecting the two periods. Juno wondered when, if ever, she would see her ship again. That day wouldn't come any sooner by just lying there, she told herself. Reaching out with her left hand, she felt around her and slowly sat up. There was nothing above her head she might bang into, and nothing but empty flatness on the floor in any direction. The surface she'd been lying on felt like unadorned plastoid, but there was a distinct smell of duralloy in the air, and a complex whine in the background that spoke of a ship under power. They were underway, wherever they were going. It was probably for the best, she told herself, that they hadn't yet arrived. The shoulder of her uniform had been cut away and new bandages placed over her blaster wound. It seemed to her questing fingers like a capable job. She supposed bounty hunters would have to learn at least basic medical skills if they were to keep their prisoners alive long enough to earn a reward. For that, she was grateful, if nothing else. She rose up onto her hands and knees and explored the space around her more thoroughly. She soon learned that it was a cage, approximately 2 meters high, wide, and deep, with horizontal metal bars along two walls and plastoid elsewhere. She searched for a hinge or a lock, but found nothing. The bars most likely recessed into the walls and would only retract on the ship's owner's command. With no tools and no light, she could see no way of getting out of the cage, let alone taking control of the ship and turning it around. She put her head in her hands. That she had to go back was something she didn't doubt at first. Starkiller had returned. What else was there to worry about? But the unremitting darkness began to get to her. The questions she had asked herself while being dragged from the Salvation returned. Starkiller was undeniably back. How? Why? How long? And where was he now? Could he possibly be dead again? Time wore on, and she began to doubt the evidence of her eyes. She had only glimpsed him on the Salvation. It was conceivable that she had mistaken someone else for him, but was it conceivable that there was anyone else in the galaxy with the ability to do what he did? It had to be him. But the rest of her doubts weren't so easily dismissed. Starkiller was alive. And while the part of her that had mourned him rejoiced, the simple fact of his existence wasn't enough to reassure her completely. The ramifications of his return weren't going to go away simply by assuming that he would eventually come for her, or hoping that she could escape, in order that they would be together again.
how had he come back? She had seen him consumed in a massive explosion while rescuing the rebel leaders from the Death Star, an explosion that Kota had assured her had definitely killed him. She had felt as though part of her had died, and she had moved forward in complete faith that what she'd seen was real, that Kota had neither lied nor been mistaken. Starkiller had died, but now he was back. The explanation for this apparently simple fact had to lie far beyond what she regarded as normal, perhaps even possible, and the source of that explanation worried her. Had he been alive all this time, or had he only recently returned from the dead? That was another question with powerful undercurrents. If he had been alive the last year, why hadn't he contacted her? What had he been doing? When had Kota learned about it? It was clear to her now that Starkiller had been aboard the Rogue Shadow when it docked, and that he was most likely the source of the tactical information Kota had given her. How long had they been in league to keep this knowledge from her? How far, in that light, should she trust the information? On the latter point, she had no choice. Sealed up in the belly of a bounty hunter's prison ship, she might as well have been in another universe as far as the Rebel Alliance was concerned. They might even think her dead, if the battle went badly and the Salvation was destroyed. She might never get the chance to share her concerns, or to ask Kota why he'd deceived her. The painkiller was wearing off. A long, throbbing ache spread outward from her shoulder, down her arm and spine and up into her skull. She embraced the pain at the same time as she hated it. It cleared her thoughts. She remembered the Empirical, the last time she had been a prisoner. Then she had thought Starkiller dead, killed by his master under the orders of the Emperor. Then, as now, he had returned from the grave. Darth Vader had told him that he had been rescued before his life signs had faded away completely. But that could have been a lie. Had whatever process brought him back then been used now, too? How many times could a man die and be reborn and still remain the same man? Escape had seemed impossible from the Empirical. It was Starkiller himself who had rescued her. His appearance in her cell had seemed a miracle, or a pain-induced fantasy designed to ease her own passage from life. She had put out of her mind what the guards had called them then. But those words came back to her now. They had called him Experiment and Lab Rat. They had feared him long before he had attacked them, for reasons she had never wondered about before.
"I saw you die,"
she had told him.
"But you've come back."
All he had said in reply was, "I have some unfinished business." As though that explained everything. She wondered now if he could have used a Jedi mind trick on her in that moment to assuage her concerns. He had been mostly Vader's tool at that point, so she could readily understand why he might have done so. But those concerns about his survival returned a hundredfold, as though they had compounded at the back of her mind in the time since. What would she say to him now, if he appeared in the cell with her? Would he tell her what his unfinished business was this time? Did it matter? If it was her, perhaps it made all the difference in the universe. She got up and paced as best she could. The diagonal across a 2-meter square cell was less than 3 meters, but it gave her something to do. She didn't know how soon they would arrive at their destination, wherever that was. It could be hours yet. She needed a distraction from her thoughts, because they were leading her down a very dark path.